The opinions expressed on the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of KTXT, its management, Texas Tech University, or any living person. This is the Devil's Advocate.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocate. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Very nice day. We are joined today. We have some returning politicos, Anna Lavis.
You're wrong.
And
oh, no,
Dr. K.
Sorry.
So glad to be back today. Hello, guys.
We also have a new guest, Paul Williamson.
Hello.
You want to introduce yourself, Paul? Introduce yourself, Paul, a little bit?
Why, yes, I will.
What's your story?
Well, I'm a senior journalism major. I'm graduating in December. I'm from Houston, and I was on the debate team for about 9 years of my life in high school and in college. So,
very fun.
3 years for
the debate team.
Yeah.
What was your specialty? Everyone has a specialty in debate, right?
Oh, man. I guess my specialty was debating about capitalism and the free market.
Oh, perfect. Well,
that's
you'll
my favorite
fit in
thing.
Perfect. And we also have Caitlin Osborne. Caitlin, if you'd like to introduce yourself to the listeners.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. I'm also a senior journalism major. I'm graduating in December. And instead of from Houston, I'm from Lubbock. And the reason why I'm on this show is Anthony Hall recommended me. So Anthony, if you're listening out there somewhere, hey, what's up?
A nice shout out to one of our old hosts, Anthony. I'm, of course, I'm Evan Dixon. Today we got a few good topics. Of course, coming up September 30th, the fiscal cliff and the government shutdown of 2013, which feels like Groundhog Day from 2011. Can you guys jump in and kind of tell the listeners a little bit about what exactly is going on and how we found ourselves in the exact same place we were 2 years ago?
So basically we have this issue, if we do not pass a budget, that we will go into a government shutdown, which just sounds so scary, I know, but I'll argue this later. I think it's not as scary as it sounds, but we have to raise a debt ceiling in order to do that. Republicans have already said that we're, you know, if we don't exclude Obamacare from the budget, then they will not support it. So we kind of have a gridlock. That's what's going on right now with that.
Louder.
Anna, what were you going to say?
I'm Caitlin.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
And I've already messed up everyone's name.
We can fix that later. Well, basically, I state as Congress is basically like a bunch of college students. You know, they're experts at procrastinating, you know, kind of like senioritis. You know, they push everything to the last minute. They're waiting till the absolute last minute to decide this. And so, you know, I'm a big procrastinator. I wait till the last minute to do everything. So I know, you know, what they're feeling. I can understand that. But still, they should figure some stuff out. So,
okay. Well, Paul, do you want to say something?
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like the Republicans are sticking to their MO of obstructing against Obama and preventing his agenda from getting passed. It seems like that's all they've been doing for the past 6 years instead of helping America.
We would never do such a thing.
Well, now I think we have a little montage that Dr. K has clearly been staying up all night to put together. You can tell by the lines under his eyes. So, Jorge, if you want to run that.
There are wisdom cracks in there.
Wisdom cracks, yes.
In just 10 days, the federal government will be out of money to do many of the things that it does. Today, the Republican-led House passed a funding bill, but it has no chance of passing in the Senate, controlled by the Democrats. That's because the bill would cut off all the money for Obamacare.
Congress fails to fund the government by October 1st, national parks, museums, and monuments will close.
I mean, I don't mind them disagreeing with me. They don't like the Affordable Care Act. They'd rather have people not have health insurance. You know, I'm happy to have that debate with them. But you don't have to threaten to blow the whole thing up just because you don't get your way.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel.
My colleagues have all voted in favor of this law because it's going to help moms and dads and families and young people and seniors all across this country.
Carly sees a grocery store. The president, Mac McClam, has said it's not feasible or sustainable to extend coverage for all of the 1,100 employees that he has. He too may have to cut hours for much of his workforce.
In Alaska, it's predicted that premiums could rise between 30 and 80%.
We're running out of time to fix this, but we could fix it tomorrow. Both houses of Congress can take a simple vote to pay our bills on time.
Show me the money.
Then work together to pass a budget on time.
Money! Get away. Get a good job with more pay and you're okay.
Essential government employees like air traffic controllers and U.S. troops will have to work temporarily without pay.
Morale in this base is shut the hell. Just look out there. Quiet.
While workers considered non-essential will be furloughed, causing delays on services ranging from IRS refunds to passport processing.
This place is a mess. Either you don't know what you are doing, or this is one of the most intentional acts of brutality that you have cooked up with stiff competition for that honor.
Mr. Grinch, you're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
And we have said over and over again, this law is going to increase the cost for the working middle class families of this country, and we're now seeing it. We've said from the beginning that this law will harm our economy, and we're seeing our economy turn from a full-time job economy into a part-time job economy.
Then we can declare an end to governing by crisis and govern responsibly by putting our focus back where it should always be, on creating new jobs, growing our economy, and expanding opportunity, not just for ourselves, but for future generations.
Our message to the United States Senate is real simple. The American people don't want the government shut down, and they don't want Obamacare. Yeah.
Welcome back to The Devil's Advocate. That was a great montage by Dr. K, don't you guys?
That's me playing the violin, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could play.
It's gonna make me cry.
You know, seventh grade.
Yeah. What's your favorite song to play?
You know, Mozart, number
one,
two.
Well, thank you guys for joining us today on The Devil's Advocate. Please join the conversation. Just go on Twitter. You can join us. Search The Raider 88.1, or you can join us on Facebook also and just search The Raider 88.1. It's very simple. Anna would really love you to join the conversation on there.
I was so surprised I didn't get that many tweets about the upcoming date. I thought that we'd have at least.
I know, we could have done a story on that.
Yeah,
so hopefully this week, just search at Raider 88.1 to join the conversation online. I think first, let's go around the room. Does everyone think the government will shut down the end of September, Paul?
No, I think it's just a bunch of fear tactics. I think they'll get something done, whether it be push it back another month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever they've been doing. They'll figure it out because it just looks bad on everybody's hands. It's too politically dangerous.
Caitlin, what do you think?
Well, this to me is just like deja vu. I mean, what, this happened in January, February, you know, it's all the same thing again. So if it didn't happen then, I don't think it's going to happen now. I mean, it's true the last time that this did happen, it was during the Clinton administration in 1995, 1996. And, you know, the shutdown only lasted about 21 days. You know, compared to years or months, that's not a long time. So I don't feel like this is going to be a big issue.
Anna, how about you?
Well, I'm going to quote a Democrat president here and say, fear nothing but fear itself. And I'm not scared of the government shutting down. So if that happens, so be it.
You think it will shut down, or you're not scared of it?
I'm just saying I'm not going to, you know, be sad if I can't go to the national park next weekend.
Yeah, but all the employees of the national park might be sad they can't go.
You know, thank God we have LPNL because we still get our trash picked up here in Lubbock.
I mean, congratulations for us. That's great. But I don't know. I feel like this is just going to be awful. And it's, of course, Republicans don't care about the meaningless jobs of the non-essential employees that will not get paid.
Anna, weren't we discussing a number earlier about government employees and pay? Do you remember
that? We were. Was it 5 out of the 7 richest counties?
I think it's 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. I'm sorry. 70%, everyone. That's a large percentage, is in the Washington, D.C. area. And that is the area in which the trash would not be picked up.
But
so
that's from that liberal news outlet. What is it? Slate? You know, that's that right-wing news outlet, Slate.
I know. They're always on our side, you know.
Yeah. They were reporting 7 out of 10, the wealthiest counties, D.C. suburbs.
Factual.
So what do you guys think will go forward from here? What are we going to see in the next couple weeks before this non-government shutdown?
Anarchy.
Who do you think is going to win? Are we going to get rid of or defund Obamacare, or where do we go from here?
Of course, you know, I want my side to win, the Republicans, but I just don't see us defunding Obamacare, as, you know, it's not going to pass in the Senate, and Obama's already said he's going to veto it, even if it was. So I think Obamacare is inevitable, but by us making a stand, we're really saying, hey, we stand for principle, which is something the left doesn't know about.
So let me give some real quick, nicely said, some real quick background on it. A couple of dates that are important. Monday, September 30th, is when the budget expires. That's when the budget is due. The next day, October 1st, is when Obamacare takes effect. There's already been talk of a continuing resolution, which is just continuing current funding levels. What happened last week that brought all this on is Republicans passed a budget, and the House's responsibility is to pass a budget. All spending must originate in the House per the Constitution. They passed a $1 trillion budget. It's 900 some billion dollars for the year. They left Obamacare out, and they said, we're passing a full budget, which, by the way, Obama and the Democrats in the Senate, and when the Democrats were in the House, haven't passed a budget in 5 years. They've just ignored it, which is a constitutional violation. Just saying. But the Republicans said, we'll pass the budget with funding for everything but Obamacare. There's no chance that's going to pass in the Senate. That's what Scott Pelley was talking about. And that's why we are where we are right now.
Well, the thing is, these are really two big issues, healthcare and spending. And I mean, they're sort of related, but there's trillions of dollars at stake. They're two really big issues, and they need to be treated separately if we're going to do this right. And so I feel like the Republicans just throwing in Obamacare in there and just saying, you know, we want to get rid of this, and in order to get rid of this, we have to pass this, or sorry, we have to go into default. And I mean, I don't really agree with that at all. Just, I mean, you know, it's not going to happen.
I think it's hilarious how Republicans are so against Obamacare, even though it's quite a friendly free market bill. It's literally pure. It's competition. People go online to pick their insurance companies. They see the price comparison online through these insurance exchanges. It's pure free market competition. That's how they reduce health costs in Switzerland. It has worked. And this was supported by Romney. Let's not forget, this is originally a Republican idea.
Well, now we're going to cut you off. Sorry, Caitlin. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in just a minute with more discussion on the debt ceiling and funding. We'll be right back right after this. So.
My life like this, no tomorrow. All I've got.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Devil's Advocate. I'm Evan Dixon, along with Anna Lavis, Caitlin Osborne, Paul Williamson, and Dr. K is now sitting in the other room, kind of creepily sitting through the window, our own little gargoyle of information.
The man behind the curtain.
They sequestered me over here. That's why I'm over here.
So, Anna, I guess I have a little... Karl Rove wrote something in the Wall Street Journal on the 19th, basically saying that Republicans always get blamed for everything.
Always.
Kind of a pity party article. But also he said kind of at the very end that the defunding strategy is basically a bad idea. And he says, going down that road would strengthen the president while alienating independents. It is an ill-conceived tactic, and Republicans should reject it. So my question to you, I guess, is why is Boehner and all of the other Republicans basically going down this road, even when one of their own leaders, whether it be very much obviously behind the scenes, one of their leaders is saying that this is a bad idea? Why even go forward with it and pass it through the House?
I think anyone that studies political science knows that politics is a game of strategy. I don't think Republicans, the House Republicans, passed this bill thinking that this was a realistic solution. I mean, it's just not going to pass in the Senate. The House Republicans know that. Ted Cruz has said he will filibuster. I mean, we don't know if he'll actually do that, which would, you know, not even get that bill to be passed. It wouldn't even get to the Senate to be voted on. So, by the House Republicans signing this bill, it is saying to the American people, the people they represent, because 6 out of 10 Americans, number one, believe the federal government has too much power. You now have 81% of Republicans believing that this Obamacare is too powerful, with 65% of independents. So I don't know what he's saying about alienating independents, because 65% of independents also believe this about Obamacare being too powerful. So by the House Republicans passing this, they are saying to their constituents, the people, because I believe the government actually represents the people, you know, the people of America.
Right.
They're saying, look, we will fight for you, even if it is doomed.
But at the same time, the Congress is in the, what is it now, under 15% approval rating of the House. How isn't this just more of the same from them saying that, oh, we're going to defund Obamacare and then come back in the end? And they've already conceded the fact that they're going to have to fund Obamacare. Isn't that just doing more of the same and taking more trust away from Americans?
I don't think it's taking trust away. Once again, I think it's a matter of principle. And
because nobody in D.C. would ever do anything simply for a political strategy.
Ever. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a political process. And this is why our country is so great. There's checks and balances everywhere. And bills are very difficult to get passed. The budget is going to, you know, that's the most important thing that keeps this country afloat is our budget. So it's going to have, it's going to be complex. And this is a complex situation. And yeah, I mean, at the very end of the day, Obamacare is going to pass.
Well, what I find really interesting is that the Republicans want to pass this ideological bill instead of actually doing real work to help America. It just seems that the House Republicans is all they've done for the past 6 years, 7 years, however long, is just what can we do now to obstruct Obama instead of helping out America, instead of working with Obama on Obamacare when it first came out. Obama put a lot of compromises forward. He took out the public option. He took out the advisory board. And the Obamacare in itself utilizes
Death penalties.
Oh, thank you, Sarah Palin. The myth that just continues to just come back up.
Hockey moms.
What?
Hockey moms.
Oh, well.
Whatever that means. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I'm a little lost on that one, Dr. K.
More than half of Americans oppose the healthcare law. So there's an argument that Republicans, and this is a case they make, are actually representing the American people, Paul.
Well, the problem with that is that the reason why Americans are so against Obamacare is because of the misinformation and the fear tactics by the Republicans. I firmly believe this, that they have spewed so much misinformation, like death penalties,
because
calling
we own
it socialism.
The media and all.
Yeah, Rupert Murdoch owns the media.
That conservative media.
Yeah, Fox News.
On one outlet.
I think that it says a lot that we're actually calling it Obamacare instead of like going by like a healthcare law or the actual name, which is really long. It's kind of like with Hoovervilles during the Great Depression. You know, it kind of says something when something that, you know, is a result of a president is being named after them in a negative way. And so, I mean, that just sort of reflects the public's view that this isn't really popular. You know, people don't want this, you know, and Obama wants to continue to push the universal health care. And even though the public isn't all for it, you know, he's really determined. And, you know, I don't think, you know, if the public doesn't want it, we shouldn't have it.
Well, the Affordable Air Affordable Care Act is a nice transition into something Paul and I were discussing earlier, which is paying for health care. So the idea is it's supposed to ensure the 20-some million Americans who don't have health insurance. By the way, what state, piece of trivia, what state has more uninsured than any other state by a wide margin?
Texas.
Texas, exactly right. So we're trying to insure those folks. And as with all things with capitalism, and I'm counting on Anna to step up here, somebody somewhere has to pay for it. And so that's the complexity here is, and my health care costs went up. I still have employer-based health care through Texas Tech. So I'm going to pass that on to you through tuitions and student loans. No, I'm just kidding. But my costs did go up so that those 20 million uninsured could get insurance. Somebody does have to pay for it, though.
Well, I'm already paying for health insurance. I don't want to pay for other people's health insurance. I mean, everyone, I feel, should get their own health insurance. It's like car insurance, you know? If someone hits you and they don't have car insurance, who pays for it in the long run? You do. And so, I mean, I just think that people need to step up and get health insurance, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to be paying for it, if that makes sense. I mean.
So, Paul, is health insurance the same as car insurance?
Well... No, in the sense, well, for me, I think health insurance should be government provided, and if not, then it should be individually mandated. I think that whenever you increase the risk pool, I think that reduces the cost for everybody. So I think whenever you have more people having insurance, you don't have to have the taxpayer foot the bill at county hospitals when you go to the hospital for a heart attack when you're 45, when you should have had preventative care when you were.
I'm older than that. You're scaring me.
Yeah. We're writing your tombstone right now, Dr. K.
Anna, you look angry right now with what he's saying. What are you thinking?
Well, I just have a point I'd like to bring up. So starting next year, when the Affordable Care Act will be in place, it severely weakens the link between health insurance premiums and age-related risk. And as you all know, older individuals are the healthiest among the community, not the young.
Totally. And,
right. So, okay, so preventing health insurance from fully accounting for age will not change the reality that, in general, the older you are, the greater your medical expenses are, right?
Well, what will solve for that is this whole issue of medical loss ratio. The bill forces companies to spend 80 to 85% of the premiums that are paid. So whenever insurance companies are actually doing, it forces insurance companies to do their job to pay for people's health benefits. Don't restrict their coverage for pre-existing conditions, which will reduce costs overall
and less for administrative costs like paying fat salaries to execs.
Well, let me you know. Okay, if insurance can't charge these older individuals, so they're going to have to overcharge someone, and guess who that is, and guess what generation that is.
Thank you guys for paying for my health care. I appreciate that.
You know, anything we can do, Dr. K, I mean.
I think we have drifted off the debt limit crisis a little bit, but that's okay. We actually have a sound clip, or a clip from Speaker Boehner. He actually is discussing Obamacare. I think it'd be a perfect time to listen into that. Jorge, do you have that ready?
You know, we had a victory today for the American people. And frankly, we also had a victory for common sense.
Yeah.
Senator Baca said it right several months ago when he said that this law is a train wreck.
Yeah.
And it is a train wreck. You know, the president said, if we pass this law, health care costs will go down. Well, now we find out that health care costs are going up for most Americans. The president said, if you like the health insurance policy that you have, you can keep it. Well, we found out that's not quite accurate either. And in the coming months, millions of Americans are going to find out it's just not quite true. Listen, this is hurting our constituents. It's hurting the American people. At a time when the economy is barely eking along, wages aren't increasing, new jobs aren't available, and what are we doing? We're putting more cost and more inconvenience on the American people. It's time for us to say no. It's time to stop this before it causes any more damage to American families and American businesses. You got businesses all over the country who are not hiring because of the impact of this law. You've got other businesses that are reducing the hours for their employees because of this law. And so our message to the United States Senate is real simple. The American people don't want the government shut down, and they don't want Obamacare.
That was Speaker Boehner right after the House passed the budget without funding Obamacare, and he had the sign under his podium said hashtag Senate must act, obviously calling the Senate to do their part. So what were you going to say, Anna?
I think I'll go to Caitlin because I'm not sure what I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
Well, Paul mentioned earlier in the show about Switzerland, and Switzerland has universal health care. But the thing about Switzerland is they're not trillions of dollars in debt. They aren't funding wars. They aren't in debt to China, you know. And I think that universal health care is a reasonable goal, and it is attainable, but not right now. I mean, our economy is very unstable, and if we want to have universal health care, we have to get our economy on track before we come out and do this big thing that is going to change, basically, the face of our economy.
And another commonality there in the Nordic countries is a lot of people have very close to the same salary and pay the same in taxes, far fewer poor to support, and far fewer disparities between the top and the lowest taxpayers.
Just full of facts today, Dr. K. Thank you so
well,
much.
Well, like Celine Dion, it's all coming back to me now. Do you like that one?
There we go.
I'm
pretty clever, cunning. Anyways, I have a metaphor. Because a lot of my friends, this is a very complex bill. And so they ask me all the time, Anna, you know everything. Please explain to me this in the best way you know how. And
you're such nice friends.
They're the best.
Do they really know
are
you?
These just people on the street or...
Twitter followers, you know?
Twitter followers, yeah, basically. The people not asking me out on dates. Anyways, okay, so I have this metaphor, right? So let's say I have a peanut butter sandwich, right? And it's awesome, crunchy edition. And So I have this sandwich, it's a full sandwich, and I have about 10 friends in the room. Basically, what Obamacare is, it would be me dividing that sandwich into 10 pieces so that every single person can have a piece and they can be fed, and it all sounds great. Sounds like a utopia, right? Because everyone gets a piece of that sandwich. But at the end of the day, how small is that? And is it going to be adequate enough to feed us, to keep us going all day? No. And that's what the healthcare is, because you're taking my health insurance, and we are dividing the care amongst America.
I think the most important question is, does peanut butter sandwich have jelly on it? Because, you know, that's really important.
I'm not a jelly person.
Really?
Plus, it's going to increase the cost. Yeah, you just can't go there.
Yeah.
And peanut prices are going up.
One more. Speaking of prices going up, one more number for you. There was a promise when they passed the Affordable Care Act a couple years ago that the costs would stay under $1 trillion and be balanced by crackdowns on fraud, by reining in Medicare. Now those costs are well over $1.5 trillion. They're closing on $2 trillion. And again, my costs for my insurance policy went up this year. So it's clearly having an impact. It's having another impact I think a lot of people didn't foresee. And we have some Republican lawmakers talking about this. Don't worry, we have the president queued up, so he'll catch up in a minute. But some various Republicans talk about Obamacare and about how we're shifting from a full-time to a part-time economy. Jorge, can we give a listen to that?
The 5 years spent digging out of the crisis, the last thing we need is for Washington to manufacture another one. But that's what will happen in the next few weeks if Congress doesn't meet two deadlines.
What happened?
Second, Congress must authorize the Treasury to pay America's bills. This is done with a simple, usually routine vote to raise what's called the debt ceiling.
The House has acted to keep the government open, to control spending, and to protect people from an unworkable law that is making it harder on them. My colleagues have all voted in favor of this law because it's going to help moms and dads and families and young people and seniors all across this country. And that's who this is all about. When I was home in August, like so many of my colleagues, I heard the stories from individuals and families who are concerned, who are panicked over the implementation of this law and the impact that it's having on their lives. So that's why the House has acted. And today, we urge the Senate to take action. We urge our colleagues in the Senate, our allies on the outside, and the American people to push the Senate to have this important debate on the floor of the Senate. Because if we are going to take action on behalf of the American people, we need the Senate to have this debate on the floor of the Senate.
When we started this health care debate, the president led with a very big promise to the American people. If you like the health care that you can have, that you currently have, you can keep it. Today, the headline reads that 20,000 Americans who work for Home Depot will no longer be the case. They were provided even as part-time. But Obamacare does not allow that. That's why today when we acted, it wasn't just a group of Republicans, but it was a bipartisan vote. Let me state that again because I want to make sure you write it correctly. It was a bipartisan vote because we're Americans first.
Earlier this summer, a nonprofit group in Fort Smith, Arkansas, that provides care for seniors, announced that they're cutting hours for hundreds of staff members to 28 hours a week. Carly sees a grocery store. The president, Mac McClam, has said it's not feasible or sustainable to extend coverage for all of the 1,100 employees that he has. He, too, may have to cut hours for much of his workforce. In July, Lawrence Katz, owner of Dot's Diner, told the senator in a committee hearing that he may have to lay off as many as 16 workers. And these are working middle-class Americans just trying to make ends meet. Yes. Through Obamacare, Americans across the country could be hit with a rate shock. In Alaska, it's predicted that premiums could rise between 30 and 80%. And we have said over and over again, this law is going to increase the cost for the working middle class families of this country, and we're now seeing it. We've said from the beginning that this law will harm our economy, and we're seeing our economy turn from a full-time job economy into a part-time job economy.
So, Paul, how do you feel about the job market shifting from a full-time economy to a part-time economy?
Because that's why we go to college, is to get a part-time job, right?
Well, that's why I'm here.
What I say to these companies that are switching these full-time employees to part-time employees is shame on you.
We can't afford it.
I mean, I'm not against companies making money, but I'm in favor of companies making money the right way.
So do you think we should start regulating companies and make sure that they have a certain amount of full-time employees?
Well, no, I mean, obviously there's no way to really enforce that, but I think that in a world where they clearly could afford to have these part-time employees, profits for companies are at an all-time high. It's just absolutely ridiculous that these companies are now using this law as an excuse to spend less money on their employees and keep their workforce happy.
It's not an excuse. It's an actuality.
No, it's an excuse. Like, it's these companies. Yeah, there might be some small businesses that don't, but these companies, clearly a lot of them have the money to do this, and they're just not doing it. And they're using it as a way to help out the Republican friends in Congress to say, hey, because think about it, these companies, if they start laying off workers, they blame Obamacare, then Republicans can use that and say, hey, we're laying off workers because of Obamacare. I don't think it's a coincidence that this is happening.
But when have businesses, especially large businesses like Walmart, when have they ever been fair towards employees, really?
Small business owners are the average Joe. In all honesty, they're not. Maybe they're at the 250,000 threshold, which who even created that one? But these are our parents, some of them, and they don't have millions of dollars to cover these new premiums for every single employee that is full time. It's just cheaper. And maybe Obama has been saying he wants to raise the minimum wage. So I think it's all going in his favor, don't you?
Well, with raising the minimum wage, you're raising everything else. So, I mean, it really doesn't change much in that way. I mean, sure, I'd like to have more money in my pocket, but in the end, I'm going to be paying more for groceries and gas in the long run.
So many issues. Okay, so Paul's half right in the sense that I'm a millionaire and I'm just cheap and don't want to pay any more to my employees.
But, I knew it.
But the reality for most companies is their costs are going up under Obamacare. And if they are at their margins, which I think most companies are, as opposed to what Paul's saying, I think what the reality is they're either going to have to not do Obamacare because those costs are going up, or they're going to have to apply those costs elsewhere, which is they're going to have to raise the price of their products, et cetera.
Okay, so I think we actually have, I think y'all need a little help with Obama and Obamacare.
Yeah, we could use some help from the big guy.
Yeah,
go to the expert.
Do we want the long one, the first one, or the?
I think the second one would be better.
Second one's the long one. Okay, good.
Thanks, Jorge.
Second, Congress must authorize the Treasury to pay America's bills. This is done with a simple, usually routine vote to raise what's called the debt ceiling. Since the 1950s, Congress has always passed it, and every president has signed it, Democrats and Republicans, including President Reagan. And if this Congress doesn't do it within the next few weeks, the United States will default on its obligations and put our entire economy at risk. This is important. Raising the debt ceiling is not the same as approving more spending. It lets us pay for what Congress already spent. It doesn't cost a dime or add a penny to our deficit. In fact, right now our deficits are already falling at the fastest rate since the end of World War II. And by the end of this year, we'll have cut our deficits by more than half since I took office. But reducing our deficits and debt isn't even what the current standoff in Congress seems to be all about. The fact is, Democrats and some reasonable Republicans are willing to raise the debt ceiling and pass a sensible budget, one that cuts spending on what we don't need so we can invest in what we do. And I want to work with those Democrats and Republicans on a better bargain for the middle class. But there's also a faction on the far right of the Republican Party who've convinced their leadership to threaten a government shutdown if they can't shut off the Affordable Care Act. Some are actually willing to plunge America into default if they can't defund the Affordable Care Act. Think about that. They'd actually plunge this country back into recession, all to deny the basic security of health care to millions of Americans. That's not happening. And they know it's not happening. The United States of America is not a deadbeat nation. We are a compassionate nation. We are the world's bedrock investment, and doing anything to threaten that is the height of irresponsibility.
That was, of course, the president. So it seems like he's saying raising the debt ceiling is just so normal. So what's really the problem with it?
Well, what he doesn't mention when he mentioned Reagan is that the ceiling was raised 18 times under Reagan. So far, it's been 4 under Obama's administration, 7 under Bush, 8 under Clinton. So he has some catching up to do. You know, why not raise the debt ceiling 10 more times? I mean, come on, he can do it. Why not?
I think it's important to point out during Reagan's administration that the Democrats controlled both the House and Senate his entire 8 years.
Right, which is kind of sad.
It's their fault.
It's funny because Republicans used to be a party of compromising. Like Reagan worked with the Democratic House, the Republican Congress worked with Clinton, and now all of a sudden the Republicans are like, oh, well, Obama's here? Nope, not going to work with you anymore. I just don't understand where the notion of compromise comes in, because there has to be some compromise. And it seems that every time Obama extends an olive branch, Republicans reject it.
Well, Obama said in that last clip that we have to cut spending with what we don't need. And what we don't need is what the Republicans and what the nation has pretty much said in majority is Obamacare. This is what the health spending would be raised, roughly $621 billion.
Right. But instead of working with something and doing something to help America, the Republicans are still stuck in the past and fighting Obamacare, a fight that was lost a long time ago. This does nothing to help America. And that's why their approval rating is lower than, I don't know, my GPA, I guess. I can't think of anything funny at that point.
Well, sorry, I completely lost what I was going to say.
So 2 points. The Democrats were so good at compromising and accommodating under W all those years he was in office with the Democrat majorities after they took back over. And then the other issue is Reagan. It's a myth that Reagan compromised so much with the Democrats. He actually beat them into submission through the power of the bully pulpit. Chris Matthews has a new book out that tries to say Reagan being friends with the Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, at that time, was a sign that they all just got along and it was kumbaya. But Reagan was a tremendously powerful persuader and actually dominated a lot of the, especially with the Democrat majority. He beat that drum and was able to set the agenda. And I think President Obama has had tremendous success doing the same thing, which is why, and Bill Clinton to some extent, with help from the mainstream media that you seem to think Rupert Murdoch owns, CBS, New York Times, not.
Well, what I was getting at with that is just that, yeah, there's only one true conservative network out there, but the thing is they have a monopoly on the conservative voice. So I think that makes them infinitely more powerful than outlets like MSNBC.
That's not true.
That's a whole new discussion.
Anna and I are all over it. We're at least as powerful as they.
You know, I'm trying to take over the devil's advocate and make it a Republican monopoly. So
she has a secret agenda. Watch out, people.
I mean, why do you think Rush has kind of lost his radio followers? They're coming to me.
Tell you what.
Well, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're actually going to discuss some local Texas politics, Wendy Davis, and whether or not she's going to run for governor or what she will run for. So
I heard a rumor there's a Democrat in Texas. I heard a rumor.
I
really?
Did, too.
Huh. Huh.
In Austin,
the Yeti,
I think.
Or Bigfoot.
Naturally.
So we'll be back right after this. This is The Devil's Advocate.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what, I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too, and if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet and you're gonna regret, because I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, 'cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." The devil opened up his case and he said, "I'll start this show," and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this. Finished, Johnny said, "Well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, let your dog bite, no child, no." The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat, and he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again, 'cause I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best as ever been." He played, "Fire on the mountain, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. The chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, we don't fight, no child, no."
Welcome back, everyone, to The Devil's Advocate. I'm Evan Dixon, along with Anna, Caitlin, and Paul, and Dr. K in the other room, because we don't have enough mics, so we kicked him out.
I don't like how you say that.
Well, there's no other way to put it.
Where I belong.
I'm painting a picture for the listeners,
Dr. K. He's special,
so he
gets his own room.
Well done. He learned that in class.
I learned that in class this morning.
It's true journalism, I hear.
I try. So now we're talking about Wendy Davis. She announced just earlier, I guess last week, at the end of the week, that let's see, October 3rd, she was definitely positively going to announce that she has made some sort of decision on what she's going to do with the rest of her life.
So she made an announcement that maybe she's going to do something, but maybe not.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Okay. From what we know.
That makes sense completely.
So, of course, this all starts back during the second special session in Austin. Wendy Davis got up and did a 11-hour filibuster to fight against a bill that limited or increased regulations on abortion performing facilities. We actually have a story that gives the latest on the Wendy Davis
breaking news. At the Devil's yes. Advocate.
Yes, from our own, not really. Actually, KERA, who's in Dallas, the public radio there, Shelley Koffler has wrote a story just the other day about the state Democratic Party leader Hinojosa, who announced something, but he didn't really announce anything. But Shelley's got the story, so I think we'll run that story, kind of give a basis from there. Go ahead, Hori.
In the red Republican suburb of Colleyville, Democrats are organizing.
Tarrant County.
Some 50 of them have gathered at the home of their local club's president to hear from the chairman of the Texas Democratic Party, Gilberto Hinojosa. He tells them why their party next year can break the lock Republicans have had on every statewide office for two decades.
They have allowed their party to move so far to the right that it doesn't at all represent the beliefs and the dreams of mainstream Texans.
Then pulling off his suit coat and rolling up his white shirt sleeves, Hinojosa talks about who will lead the way. He recalls the now mythic event, State Senator Wendy Davis's 11-hour filibuster of a bill that would ban most abortions in Texas.
The actions intended by our state leaders on this particular bill hurt Texans.
Hundreds opposed to the bill packed the Capitol to stand with Wendy. When Republicans tried to shut down her filibuster, the crowd cut loose, causing so much disruption the bill died. Though it would be passed in a later session, Davis rocketed to national fame.
What these Republicans did was they created a movement in the state of Texas behind this woman. We have a candidate that excites the passion of Texans like I've never seen before, even more than Ann.
Ann Richards was the last Democrat and the second woman to occupy the Texas governor's office. Hinojosa believes Davis's popularity could attract enough new Democratic voters to make her the third. And he believes she can overcome the 630,000 vote difference that separated Rick Perry and Democrat Bill White in the governor's race 4 years ago.
You're going to have new Democratic voters that are part of the base that haven't voted in the past. You're going to have a lot of people who have traditionally voted for Republican candidates who are a little tired of the social agenda of right-wing Republicans. And then you're going to see a lot more bigger margin of younger voters coming out. Kind of like what you saw with Barack Obama in 2008.
I don't think Wendy Davis is exciting enough to overcome the numbers that we're looking at.
Republican pollster Mike Basilis says it's all a fantasy.
The state of Texas provides about 4 out of 7 votes for Republican candidates statewide, and that's not going to change in 2014. It may change in 2024, but we're a long way off from there.
At the Colleyville organizing event, Tarrant County's Democratic Chair Deborah Peoples rationalizes the Democrats' long losing streak this way.
Texas is not a red state. It's a non-voting state. Residents here don't go to the polls in the same kinds of numbers that residents in other states do. They've decided that the election has already forecast or foretold. And so once we put good Democrats on the ballot, people will then go to the polls and vote for them.
That's right. You heard people say Democrats, plural. She and others like Mark Bauer believe that if Davis runs for governor, she'll help elect other Democrats further down the ballot.
Everywhere from House district races all the way down to justices of the peace, constables will get such a benefit having her at the top of the ticket.
But Republican pollster Basilis says the big event that launched Davis gives his party the issue it needs to defeat her.
Go ahead. Run a campaign on abortion statewide and see what happens in a conservative state like Texas. It can cost you votes. Some people at the end of the day will be distancing themselves from Wendy Davis.
The volatility of the abortion issue may be why Ina Hoxha talks about Davis challenging a Republican opponent like Greg Abbott on women's health issues instead of abortion. On issues like education, where Republicans have cut funding. With Davis's announcement coming next week, Ina Hoxha leaves Colleyville Democrats with this message.
Don't ask Wendy to run. Don't ask her to run unless you're willing to do a lot more than you ever done in your life for this campaign.
He says to defy the odds, they'll have to roll up their sleeves and fight. Shelley Koffler, KERA News.
So I guess the real question is, do you guys think she's going to run for governor?
I think she is. Whether or not she succeeds is another story.
I think she will as well. I mean, her only other option really would be to either run again for Texas Senate, which I already know the person who is running for the Republican Senate seat for her, and that's Tony Pompas. Everyone go out and vote for him because you know I'm endorsing him.
Boo.
And
a large endorsement today.
Yeah, and it holds a lot of water,
it's
you know?
Big.
It's very, yeah, it's a lot of weight.
It'll get him a lot of votes in Fort Worth from Lubbock, yeah.
Let me tell you, I have a lot of social media followers, and I'm about to post this everywhere, so don't worry. And then the other thing that she could run for, of course, is U.S. Senate against Cornyn, which I don't think she has any chance.
In 2 years, you mean?
So, yeah. So I think governor is absolutely the race she's going to run for.
So does she have anything to lose by running in this and it pretty much accepting defeat when she starts running?
I don't think she has anything to lose. She has ever since, you know, she did the filibuster, where she was standing up for 11 hours, she gained a huge following. You know, a lot of women and people in general didn't know who she was before that, and so just that alone attracted them to her
because her dad gum shoes were so bright.
I know she's gonna get great endorsements from Nike. And
actually it was Brooks Running.
It was be Nike.
I think sales of red sneakers could be an early indicator of how much success she'll have in Texas.
Or pink.
Paul, what do you think? Is she gonna run? Will she win?
She'll run and she'll lose because this is Texas. It's not a voter turnout issue. It's just the fact that there's just so many. The rural populations in Texas are just too much for Democrats to get out the vote in those areas. It's such a huge stronghold. It's like saying it's a Republican turnout issue in California. It's not. It's just that the people in the state just happen to be conservative. So I don't think there's a chance a Democrat wins in 2014.
Although it would be nice, you know, considering the alternative, you know, right now is Rick Perry. I feel like that would be an improvement if she was governor compared to Rick Perry, personally. I mean, having
the longest serving governor in the history of the state of Texas. How can you say such a thing?
It's time for him to go.
All hail the king. I'm pretty much in the anybody but Perry boat right now. I'm not too sure if I include Greg Abbott in that, but anybody but Perry, I'll be happy.
Stabbing you straight in the heart, Anna. How do you feel?
I mean, people loved about, I mean, even Republicans are, you know, they've been wary of Perry, but I'm going to stand by him by saying Texas is still one of the strongest economies in our nation and in the world. So, I mean, say what you want about the guy, but business, we have been growing in population and in business in areas like Austin, San Antonio, Houston, Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I think that speaks volumes of him, what he's done.
And another thing is a lot of people from the northern states are coming down to cities like Austin and Dallas for jobs because the economy is growing. So, I mean, would that increase the Democratic population enough to give her, a run for governor? I mean, I think that there is a possibility that she could bridge that gap. I mean, maybe not significantly as much as, you know, I would like her to, but I think it is possible.
So my other question is, if and when she does run, what is her platform? People know her across the nation as for abortion queen. Can you be a queen of that? But they know her for abortion. What else does she run on? Does she run on, even though the law was passed, so how can she even run on that when she wasn't even technically very successful?
I mean, of course she's gonna try to target the women. But as you know, Texas is still one of the, you know, strongest ideologically social conservative states. So, I mean, even if she does target women, at the end of the day, women in Lubbock, they just don't agree with abortion. And that's just how Texas has been, and the tide doesn't seem to be changing. I think she'll also try to bring up gun rights, which is going to be interesting because she actually is a gun owner and has spoken out on the Second Amendment in support of it. But, I mean, I think those are her only platforms. And I think Greg Abbott will have an easy time, not an easy time. I think it's going to be a very bruising political race. I don't think it's going to be easy either way. And I think Greg Abbott is certainly going to pull out the guns, literally, on the gun right thing. And I think he's going to associate her with Obama and Pelosi, who Texans clearly don't like.
Well, I think it'd be very easy to have a smear campaign against her saying, Wendy Davis, she hates babies. I mean, you know, vote against her. So, I mean, it'd be very easy to convince people not to vote for her.
No, yeah. I mean, if there was, I think this just comes down to the fact that there's just, there really isn't a Democratic contender that can really win in Texas. And for at the moment, right now, for the Democrats, it's just how can they get their agenda out there and their voices heard in the state. And so they have to pick somebody polarizing so that they can get the discussion started. And I think that's pretty much what all this will do.
Well, that's pretty much all the time we have this week. Does anybody have any shout-outs, Anna, to your Twitter followers?
Shout-out to the Twitter followers. Shout-out to Tech Soccer. They're always my favorite team here at Texas Tech. Proud of our football team. And most importantly, proud of the professors that serve us every single day.
Amen. Woo-hoo. Thank you.
All I have to say is, hi, Mom. That's all. Yeah.
Paul?
Shout-out to the baseball team. Get ranked in their recruiting. Coach Tadlock's doing a great job. We ought to see the baseball team next semester, guys.
Well, thank you also to Jorge Macias for running our soundboard, and also to Jasmine Moore, our senior executive producer, and I just gave her that title. I think I upgraded her even from last week. But we'll talk to you guys next week on next Wednesday at 5 right here on Raider 88.1 FM. This is the Devil's Advocate. Have a good one.